Okay, and now the recording's on, and we'll continue with the final section of Rav Schachter's Tshuva, which deals with Megillah-related issues. When I started reading the section, I expected him to deal much more with the question that's been on many people's mind, doing Megillah on Zoom. Is that possible? Is it ever possible or inadvisable? He actually spends a minority of his time dealing with it, and we'll come back to that at the end and reflect a little bit on why that might be. This is also one area where comparing the English and Hebrew versions of the Tshuva will be an interesting exercise. And so we'll have the opportunity to do that as well. Okay, but enough preamble. Let's get started with the substance of our topic today. So, excuse me, let me just get us back to the beginning. Okay, so at this point, this is already, interestingly enough, like subtopic number 8 in this Tshuva on Inyanei Purim. So I'm not sure if he dealt with this topic in chronological order, meaning how to order, ordering the topics about Purim with regard to when they come up on Purim. It doesn't seem like it. The reason it doesn't seem like it is because he dealt with the Seuda, which we eat on Purim day, before he dealt with Megillah, which we do on Purim night. So it doesn't seem to be chronological, nor does it seem to be about the emphasis or significance. You know, he deals with the machatzit ha-shekel, this minhag that we have to give a half shekel, before he deals with Megillah, which is one of the core mitzvot of the day. So it's a little unclear to me what guiding, organizing principle there was in how this was ordered, if there was one, if it wasn't just a collection of different pieces that were strung together. But in any case, he begins here in section Chet, in the eighth section, to finally begin dealing with Megillah. Bekama ayarot ha-memshala, rak marshe sheyu asara bebet ha-knesset bebat achat. There are plenty of cities where the government only allows 10 people to be gathered together in shul at once. Mipnei sakanat ha-magefa, velo yoter, because of the concern of COVID. V'yitzarchu l'sader kriyat ha-megillah kama v'chama pe'amim b'minanim shonim. So what's the solution? If not everyone is allowed to come to shul, the solution is have lots of minyanim staggered such that everyone will be able to come. That seems like a largely effective practical solution. It probably depends on the size of the community and the size of the shul.
That also doesn't count the women because you need the 10 men and then you're without women.
Okay, so great observation. So Rav Schachter at this point actually hasn't mentioned like gender as a factor in the 10. He alludes to it very briefly, I believe, later on. But it's worth noting that for the purposes of Megillah, you don't require a minyan the same way you require a minyan for, let's say, saying Kaddish. And so in a situation where not everyone will hear the Megillah, but we know that men and women are both obligated in hearing the Megillah, I think Rav Schachter would agree that at one of these cycles, one of these minyanim that is only allowed to have up to 10 people should have women, probably more than one, because in most communities you'll need more than one cycle to get all the men and women through the system. So you're right, he hasn't mentioned gender as a factor yet, and we'll see if it is really a factor for him in a significant way. But it seems that any shul that will have enough people that will require so many Megillah readings will probably have a shul with enough spaces or be able to find enough spaces where you're able to run enough of these readings so that everyone's able to be covered, right? A Megillah reading can take a substantial amount of time. Even fast Balei Kriya can't do it so quickly. So staggering minyanim works to a point. And the question Rav Schachter is here dealing with is, okay, well, granted it works to a point, but if we need more time, can we find it? And that's what he's interested in. And that's what he starts off with in his next sentence. Bishat hadchak gadol, in a great, I never quite know the proper English translation for shat hadchak, like a extreme circumstance or suboptimal circumstance. Mevor b'shulchan arach uve mishnah brura, she'efshar lismoch ulahakel lekro ha-megillah be'erev purim mi be'od yom. One is allowed to be megill and start reading the Megillah on erev purim, meaning during Tanit Esther, Odium, during the day, before nightfall, la'achar plag ha-mincha, after plag ha-mincha. Plag ha-mincha refers to an hour and a quarter, or a halachic hour and a quarter before sunset, which is the time at which one is really allowed to start doing nighttime kinds of things. So after Plag HaMincha, for example, a person is now able to daven Maariv. Usually they'll want to daven Mincha before Plag HaMincha, and Maariv after Plag HaMincha, even if the sun is still up, you'll still be davening Maariv, the evening prayer. And so apparently Mikra Megillah is one of those mitzvot that you can do if you need to after Plag HaMincha, and that would be considered evening enough to read the Megillah. The Afilu B'tzibur, even a tzibur is allowed to do this, not only an individual. So where is the Shachter coming from? We'll switch to our source sheet. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, Mishuhu anus ktsat, if a person is slightly pressured, I like the word slightly here, it really lowers the bar from, you know, the kind of extreme pressure that says you're not going to be able to do it, to even there's some like compulsion pushing you against being able to be at a minyan or at a Megillah reading after nightfall. Ve'inu yachol leich l'beit ha-knesset, is unable to go to shul. Ve'tzarech lahamtin ad achar shakaru ha-kahal. And therefore, that person would have to wait until after the entire tzibur reads Megillah. Ve'kasha alav leishev v'ta'anit kol kach. And it's too difficult for him to fast that long. It's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch is picking up on the difficulty of fasting as one of the difficulties involved. In theory, that seems like a difficulty that might be applicable to some people during other years as well. I leave that application to another conversation. But the concern is someone might find it too difficult to wait until after Megillah reading to hear Megillah and then eat. That would be too difficult. Therefore, yachol lishmoa kriyata mi ba'od yom mi plag hamincha ulamala. Therefore, that person will be able to hear Megillah during Tanit Esther, after Plag HaMincha, so in this like hour or so before sunset. By the time you finish Megillah, it'll almost be the end of the fast, or depending on the time you start, the fast might already be over, and you'll be able to eat without having to wait, and that will be an advantage for this purpose. However, the Rama adds, "Aval asur la'achol kodem sheyishma kriyat ha-Megillah." You can't actually eat before you hear the Megillah. Right? The idea is not, oh, you could wait until sunset, then eat, then hear the Megillah. That's a bigger problem than just setting up Megillah reading early, it seems. Afilu hatanet kasha alav. Even if the fast is very difficult, still you're supposed to wait until the fast ends and you've heard the Megillah in order to eat. Either one of those without the other should be a problem. And the Mishnah Berurah fleshes out the logic the way we had just articulated it. Miplag hamincha ulamala. Duhu sha'a uravia kodem halayla. It is an hour and a quarter before nightfall. Reminder, these are the halachic hours, so depending on the time of year, it would be a little bit longer or shorter than, 75 minutes. And the reason, v'atam, d'cheven d'chashvinan le'layla le'inyan tefilat arvit, because it's considered evening, vis-a-vis mariv, vis-a-vis the evening prayer, she'yachol yitpalel b'zman ha'hu, therefore, chashvinan le'layla, we consider it night, gam le'inyan haseh, also from regular reading. Once it's considered night for one purpose, it's considered night for all purposes. And therefore, if you really need to make a Megillah reading during that time, you're able to do so. Now, one thing that's interesting that we did not see in the Shulchan Aruch Mishnah Berurah that Rav Shachter quoted are the last two words from this paragraph. Ve'afilu b'tzibur. Even a tzibur is allowed to do so. So this, I think, reflects a step beyond what we saw in the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. The Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah are talking about individuals. If a person is an anus ktsat, then he could hear the Megillah earlier in the day. We didn't make a claim that a tzibur is allowed to set this up, but Rav Shachter seems to think there's no reason to make a distinction. And therefore, if you could do it for an individual, you could also do it for a tzibur for this purpose. Okay, so the initial thrust that Rav Shachter is getting at here is, if you need to make more Megillah readings to make sure everyone is able to hear it in order to be compliant with the law, then you're allowed to stretch out your time and start saying Megillah a little bit earlier. If you start saying Megillah from Plag, you could probably squeeze in a reading or two before you'd normally be able to start a reading in the evening. And you could get another 10 or 20 people, or depending on how many rooms you have available, 40, 60, etc., as many as you're able to squeeze in. I'll also make note of the fact that for Rav Shechter, the motivation seems to be legal, right? The memshala, the government, tells you you're not allowed to have more than 10 people, so we need to stagger the readings. He has not yet mentioned safety concerns, though based on the thrust of various other Chivot that we've seen, safety concerns would be prominent to his mind. I suspect that he's just, you know, in sort of leaving open the room to distinguish between different communities and different risk tolerance and safety standards in different communities. But he would certainly care about safety. He has also not yet talked about, and he's discussed this, I think, in other contexts that we have not learned together, the question of personal comfort, meaning there are individuals who will sometimes say that they don't feel comfortable going to a minion, even if the minion feels comfortable being open. He, at this point, isn't addressing what to do if a person doesn't feel comfortable with safety standards, even if the community as a whole does feel comfortable with those standards. So we don't know if that would count as a legitimate enough reason to make an earlier minion for Rav Shechter. That would be something that we'd have to look at his broader view on varying safety standards and how to account for those. All right. So this is the opening thrust. He's setting up a pretty broad standard. You could really start even on Erev Purim to start reading the Megillah. But that's not always going to be necessary. V'im ein kol kach shatadchak. If it isn't so necessary, shemuchachrim lehatchil hakriya harishona miplak hamincha, such that you need every, you know, literally like one after the other simultaneous readings in order to make sure that everyone's covered. If you're not in such a position, so you don't need to start before the day of Purim, but maybe you want to start from Ben Hashmashot, right? Which is this time after sunset, before Teta Kochavim, before stars come out and night, you know, begins in earnest. This is a lot of time referred to as Ben Hashmashot. Which is considered halachically, asher hu safek yom v'safek laila. Halacha is unsure whether Bein HaShmashot is considered a daytime or nighttime. And so for various purposes, we're going to be machmir one way or the other. So just to choose a very obvious example, we start Shabbos at sunset. That's when we treat Shabbos as beginning. From sunset to Tzeda Kochavim, we have, Bein HaShmashot, we have this intermediate time. And then afterwards, we have night. So we start Shabbos before the beginning of that time, before sunset on Friday, and we end Shabbos after Teda Kochavim on Saturday night. Because at the time in the middle, we're not sure if it's considered day or night, and so we tend to be stringent, at least for biblical kinds of obligations, to make sure that we say them during what we know is day or what we know is night. So the question is, for Megillah, are we going to consider that time sufficiently nighttime that we're able to rely on it for the purpose of reading the Megillah? B'shat hadchak yesh makom lahakel. In a pressing circumstance, there is room to be lenient. L'dat ha-sovrim shemikra Megillah einena midivrei Kabbalah, ela rak midirabanan. Because there are views that consider Megillah to be a derabanan mitzvah and not a divrei Kabbalah mitzvah. We've alluded to this a couple of times in the past, that some of the mitzvot on Purim are what we call divrei Kabbalah. They're not biblical level obligations because they don't appear in the Torah, in the Chumash. But nor are they rabbinic because they do appear in Tanakh. They appear in other books of Tanakh, in this case, the book of Esther. And so identifying which mitzvah falls into which category becomes very important for how we treat it in a case, let's say, where we're unsure if something is day or night. So if Mikra Megillah is a total rabbinic obligation, then we'd be able to be lenient and rely on the opinion that considers Bein HaShmashot nighttime and read Megillah during that time. However, if it has a standard of Divrei Kabbalah, which we treat like Divrei Torah, that's the sign he alludes to here, Divrei Kabbalah ke Divrei Torah Damian, they are considered like Divrei Torah, then we'd want to be machmir and we'd want to avoid starting Megillah reading until after Teda Kochavim, after full nightfall. And so we quote here a machloket between various achronim about this point. I cited just one view very briefly on the source sheet. The Mishnah Brura quotes the Prima Gadim. Katavim Prima Gadim. Safek im kara et ha-Megillah. Let's say a person is unsure if they read or heard the Megillah. Hard to imagine, but not impossible. Someone isn't sure if they heard the Megillah, or maybe isn't sure if they heard the Megillah to the point where they fulfilled their mitzvah. Efshar delo amrinam b'zeh sveka derabana l'kula. Maybe we would not say that a safek derabanan we treat leniently. Therefore, you wouldn't have to hear the Megillah again, right? If you're unsure if you fulfill a rabbinic obligation, you don't have to repeat that obligation in the hopes of fulfilling it. But maybe that doesn't apply to Megillah, mishum dehu divrei Kabbalah, because it's considered divrei Kabbalah, not a derabanan, and so we have to be more stringent about fulfilling that mitzvah. And Rav Shachar quotes a debate among various views about what should be the case. He also quotes an interesting point we won't spend that much time on now, but worth seeing. Va'af l'dat ha-sovrim shemikra Megillah bayom adina k'divrei Kabbalah. Even those who think that reading Megillah during the day is a divrei Kabbalah level obligation, which is a higher level obligation. Yish svara chazaka b'poskim lomar shakriyat halayla ena ela derabanan. There is a reason to think that the nighttime reading is a less serious or less stringent reading and might only be a derabanan level obligation. And so even if we couldn't start the morning one early, we might be able to start the night one early. V'chein haya ragil rabbeinu lomar. And the Rav would also say this. And this is an interesting discussion about the two different Megillah readings that we have. Which one is considered the main reading? Which one's considered a secondary reading? Maybe they're both considered readings equally. I think in our experience of performing mitzvot, we find that the nighttime one has a lot more fanfare and the daytime reading is considered secondary, but Rav Shachar seems to think that on the scale of halachic priorities, the daytime reading is actually a more important one. But we'll put that to the side because that's a little bit far afield for us. Okay. So Rav Shachar says, maybe you could be lenient during this time, that if you want to need to start after sunset, you could do that, right? If you don't need to start all the way during the previous day, which is very hard to argue is really nighttime, surely we could call after sunset nighttime if we need to. However, if it's not a very serious need, if it wasn't, you know, a pandemic where you really needed to divide up people and readings to such an extent, we wouldn't be inclined to be lenient in this way. Number one, chada de asur lahachnis adam or et atmo l'sfeika derabanan l'chadchila. A person can't willingly put themselves into a situation of safek derabanan, right? I can't willingly read the Megillah during Banish Masho, knowing that it's only a safek that'll fulfill the obligation, that I'm only in doubt whether I fulfilled it. I'm not allowed to do that l'chadchila. If I do it, then I fulfilled my obligation, but I can't choose to do so actively. Maybe if I make a mistake, some other reason why it might happen, but I can't choose to do so if it's not a pressing circumstance. That's reason number one. Reason number two is a little more, you know, conceptually interesting. Vishenit, debisfat emet lekritut heitzia, diyesh makom lomar. He finds a suggestion in the Achronim, which he seems to find interesting and somewhat persuasive. She ben hashmashot, hu bibchinat ikba isura. That the ben hashmashot is not considered maybe day or maybe night, and we're not sure which one it is, but it is definitely one of those. Rather, it is what's called ikba isura. It is its own unique status. Asher hi chalot shem shoneh shel safek. It is a totally different kind of doubt. Shelo nitan lahachra'a, and it can't be resolved. It can't be determined that it is either day or night. Just to like flesh it out a little bit more fully, the idea here seems to be that it's not that there's a determined answer to what Banish Mashot is. It is day or it is night. We just don't know what the answer is. Rather, it is some in-between time. It is twilight. And so it's neither properly day nor properly night, or maybe it's both properly day and properly night. And it's not like something where we could learn more information and discover the truth, discover whether it is in fact night or day. Rather, its status is itself kind of liminal. It's automatically, inherently, a safek in a way that would never be resolvable. And it's possible that in those kinds of situations where it's not that we're not sure, but rather it's neither day nor night, so then lo shayach lomer b'safek shekazeh safek derabanan l'kula. We can't say that, oh, we're going to be lenient on this issue, right? We can't say we're going to be lenient and consider it nighttime, for example, because we know that it's not nighttime. We know that Banish Mashot isn't night. It's called a twilight. It's a different thing. And so perhaps we shouldn't be lenient to rely on Ben HaShmashot for Megillah reading, unless we very much need to, because it's possible that it's not even a suffix to which the normal rule of suffix derabana lakula, that we could be lenient on rabbinic level obligations, would even apply. So the structure, I think, of this section is actually interesting. I was surprised to see this, where he starts off giving the most expansive leniency. Oh, you could even read it the day before, just after Plag HaMincha, after this hour and a quarter before sunset, if you need to. And if you don't need to do that, then you could do it at Banish Mashot if you need. And, you know, but if you don't need to do that, then you really shouldn't. But if you do, we have all these options. He concludes, Min HaNachon, Heichad Efshar, it's better where it's possible, Shelo Lahatchil Mikra Megillah Ad Tei DeKochavim. It'd be better not to do it until the end if you could avoid it. until after Teda Kol Chavim, until after proper nightfall. But if you need to, we have all these expansive leniencies. The thrust for me, the way that like this tshuva hit me, is that he really wants us to be very confident in this option. He wants us to feel good about going to shul early, and if we need a reading to happen before sunset, great. That's what we're supposed to do. That's totally fine. If we don't need to, let's not go that far. But if we do, that's the right thing to do. That's the halacha. I think that's the effect for me, literally, of this organization. As opposed to an organization that starts with, you should be doing it Teda Kol Chavim. But if you can't, maybe you could do it at Minash Masho. And if you can't do that, maybe you could even do it before. Well, now I think that I'm living a very suboptimal bidyeved kind of lifestyle, as opposed to this presentation, which tells me, no, this is the right thing for me to be doing. So I think that literary effect is something that stuck out to me. Okay, now we'll get to we'll actually spend a little bit of time on this issue, because I know this is one that I've been very interested in and have only seen the beginnings of, you know, proper discussions of. Uvdelet Brera Mamish. Now, after telling you all the ways that you could hear it in person, if you really have no choice, if there's no option, let Brera, then Yesh Lahakel, you could be lenient. Ulesmoch ala tzad shehitzia, Hagaon Rav Moshe Feinstein b'tshuva. You could rely on this position that Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests about using electronics, using microphones, using telephones to fulfill the mitzvah. Now, we'll see how he presents it. We actually won't be able to get into the proper weeds of the discussions here, but we'll see the way he presents this issue and discuss a little bit of it outside. So Rav Moshe is dealing with this question of why we can't, or under what circumstances can we not use non-live means to hear a mitzvah? Just to see the source or one of the basic sources inside, we see this Mishnah, Mesachat Rosh Hashanah, that says that if a person blows the shofar, hatokeil atoch habor, into a pit, then if you hear the kol shofar, then you're yotze. However, if you hear the kol havara, im kol havara shama, lo yotze, you've not fulfilled your mitzvah. A kol havara is something like an echo, something that comes out of the pit. So if you blow the shofar into a pit, then you hear the resonance of the shofar coming through the pit. Well, if it's the sound of the echo and not the sound of the shofar, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of hearing shofar, and you have to hear shofar again. This Mishnah is about shofar and not about Megillah. He does mention Megillah a little bit later in the context of a different halacha, but fundamentally this Mishnah is about shofar. So the first question is, does the halacha of shofar apply to other mitzvot as well? Does it apply to Megillah? Does it apply to Kriyat HaTorah? Does it apply to Havdalah? Does it apply to all of these things? Maybe only a shofar is a situation where you need to hear it from the horn itself, but maybe for other mitzvot, the idea is just to hear the words or the meaning that's being said. And even if the halacha of kol havara does apply to Megillah, then Rav Moshe Feinstein has a safek, listapik bedin shema kol havara lo yatza. Why do you not fulfill your mitzvah when you hear an echo? Maybe the problem is that you didn't hear the primary source of the noise, and that's really what the mitzvah requires. And under those circumstances, it would be hard to rely on a microphone or a telephone. Right? You're not hearing the primary voice, you're hearing a speaker system giving you the sound. Or maybe the sound isn't so clear. When you hear an echo, it's not as clear, it's not quite the same sound. And, you know, depending on this debate, you might have a leniency. The al yedeha telephone, oh, al yedeha microphone. If you use a telephone or a microphone or anything else where you're speaking into an electronic implement and it projects sound, einenu hakol harishon, it's not the primary sound. You're not hearing my voice when you hear a microphone. You're hearing the sound that comes from a speaker. But aval hakol baror, but the noise is clear. So depending on the reason that a echo is a problem, we might be able to allow or not allow telephones or microphones for different mitzvot. One area where this comes up relatively frequently is Havdalah, where very often you'll have people who live on their own, who can't make Havdalah for themselves, and people will call them and make Havdalah for them on the telephone, based on this kind of thinking, that maybe you really do fulfill the mitzvah if you hear me say the bracha through the phone. Other reasons that the phones are helpful or, you know, better, let's say, than recordings, are because phones or microphones or Zoom calls are live. So I'm speaking and immediately you're hearing, or almost immediately you're hearing the words that I'm saying, as opposed to a recording, which as far as I know, nobody says you could use for the mitzvah, where you're not really hearing anything that's related to a person speaking at all. So if you hear me speak and know the words I'm saying because the microphone is telling you the words, then you might fulfill the mitzvah, whereas a recording you wouldn't, because there's no human that you could connect the microphone, that you connect the recording to, I'm sorry. So that's the way that Rav Moshe Feinstein starts thinking about it. And he notes that there were others who were similarly unsure, and other sets of authorities. Vagon Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Hayasav Rosh Ein Kan Makom Safei Klal, Uvavadei Lo Yatza. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, no way you could use a microphone, totally impossible. Other authorities were less certain of that fact. Maybe you can use it. Okay. So practically, the way that we deal with this is, Rav Shachter tells you that you could use this as an extreme kula. The kula zo, l'shmo derach microphone. This kula involved in using a microphone, yesoda b'chlal ha-mofia b'gemara nida. The basis for being lenient this way is based on a gemara in nida, that, without getting into the context there, d'chadai hu rabbi ploni l'smoch alav v'chata d'chak. There are certain views in halacha that we say, you cannot do this, l'chadchila. You're not allowed to do this. And if you do this when you don't need to do it, you don't fulfill your mitzvah. We do not hold like this opinion. We do not rule in accordance with their reasoning. However, in a shat hadchak, in an extreme circumstance, we are allowed to rely on those opinions. That opinion is sufficient to rely on in a really extreme circumstance. And so we'll skip the mechanism that he uses to talk about this, because I want to see some of the other suggestions. But he explains like why this should be, how the mechanism works. So therefore, ve'im ein sham elishtei afshayot elu. If you only have two options, either o lishmo derach microphone o Zoom, either you're going to use a microphone or Zoom. A microphone might have the advantage over Zoom in that you might be in person but further away from everyone else. But you have a microphone projecting to a large outdoor audience, for example, that would be a little bit safer from a COVID perspective. Or even Zoom, though, should be the same kind of logic if you're hearing it projected on a microphone from a person who's reading live. So if you have that option, o lishmo bin hashmashot, or you could hear it during twilight between sunset and Seder Kochavim, hayanira ditzvei adif lishmo bin hashmashot. You should definitely hear it before bin hashmashot. That's the preferable option. But maybe if that's not an option, Zoom might be something that a person could rely upon. Before doing that, and he, you know, comes back to this point, says, well, even if that's the case, you really shouldn't rely on it if you have another option that he mentions now. Achein, im yish le'echan megillah k'shera b'yado. If a person has a kosher megillah, v'yishma derach ha-internet kriyat ha-megillah la'at. And if he hears a recording or someone reading the megillah slowly, slowly being important because it's very hard to hear a Megillah and read along if the Megillah reading is happening very quickly. But if you're reading along and you could hear it and read along properly, v'yuchal lekro la'atzmo b'nikudu v'ta'amim b'megillah shebiyado al pi mashu shomea b'internet. And if you're able to read along with what you're hearing online, but you could read it properly, you're going to read the right word, you're going to read the right trap, and you're able to read along, then zeh bevaday adif. That's definitely better for the obvious reason. You're reading yourself. You're fulfilling the mitzvah directly. You're not relying on hearing. Maybe this counts as hearing. Maybe this doesn't count as hearing. You're just fulfilling the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. If you knew the Megillah, you could read from your own Megillah at home regardless. If you don't know it, so you could hear someone read it to you and repeat after them. Under such circumstances, min ha-nachon sheyish yashmi'a la'oznav gamken, you should try to make sure that you could hear your own voice. But this definitely seems to be the best option for reading if you can't be in shul. If you can't be in shul and hear someone professional read, then reading yourself is preferable if you're able to. And if you can't, but you could read along, that would be a preferable example as well. Just to show you one example of this, I'm going to share my screen to a different site. This is a summary of the discussion of hearing the Megillah for those who can't go to shul, Rabbi Daniel Mann, who someone I've learned from in the past and have continued to. He makes a suggestion that, right, the halachically simple way to fulfill the mitzvah is for the people to read it themselves from a kosher cloth they own or can borrow. A non-proficient Baal Kore will need help, not only because of difficult trop, which is not crucial, but also because of hard words and kriuk divs. In the Megillah, there are some words that are harder just to pronounce or read, or some words that are not pronounced the way that they're written, and it becomes very difficult. And so he says, practically speaking, you could use a recording. One can use a recording and start and stop as necessary. So you play a few seconds of a recording, read it along, then play a few more seconds, read along with that, and so on. for those who prefer, and this is a great, you know, resource for anyone who is in this position. For those who prefer, I have made a 1 hour, 8 minutes video of the laning with pauses every few words so that one can read along at a comfortable pace. Now, it's a bit long, it's 1 hour and 8 minutes, but it's built such that a person is able to read along with the laning without having to try to keep up to a fast-paced laning. And it is available upon request, if anyone wants an email, I'm happy to send it to you afterwards, where you're able to get a copy of this recording if you're in a position where you're unable to go to shul, and this might be the best halachic option for you as opposed to hearing it over Zoom. So this is very interesting. I remember a conversation I had with my own Rabbi Weider from YU, who was making a comment about his laning recordings he puts on YU Torah. He has a version of a lot of laning, at least on YU Torah, not everything. But much laning appears there. And he said that at some point, a person called him up or emailed him, who lived in India, who was the only Jew in the community, and he wanted to know if they could listen to the recording and read along themselves. And he said, yeah, and the halakha seems to fit, right? As long as you're reading, especially if you could hear the words that you're saying, that works perfectly fine. You don't need to have memorized the laning in order to be a Baal Kriya. You just need to be able to do it properly. And if that means someone feeds you each word, that's totally fine. And that seems to be a preferable option as well over hearing it over Zoom. Just to conclude this section, and then we'll summarize what we've seen. It's been a lot of different suggestions and options. Uladina, practically, bevadei lechatchila yesh lahakmir lekro ha-megillah, afilu bizmana ba'asara. It's definitely better to have a minyan present if possible. If you're able to get that together, that would be better. Ach zaloma akev. It's not essential. If you don't have a minyan for a Megillah reading, you fulfill your mitzvah totally properly. It's better to have a minyan. The more, the better. The more pirsu meinisa, the more you're publicizing the miracle of Purim. But it's not a huge problem if that's impossible. Ella shalo nahagu shalo lavari haravet rivenu kishakorim shalo ba'asara. The bracha of haravet rivenu, which we say in conjunction with our Megillah reading, is something that we practice, at least our minag, is not to say it without a minyan. In particular, and here is the place where the gendered component comes in, ubifrat zeh nechleku batur im eser nashim nechshavot kikriya ba'asara. There's a debate about whether 10 women present is enough to generate this bracha of haravet rivenu. V'harama katav lahachmir bazeh, and the Rama is machmir and says not to say this bracha. Shalo levarich brachat haravet rivenu ela im kein hayusham asara gvarim. You should wait till you have 10 men, a minion in the traditional sense, and that is what allows one to say haravet rivenu, that bracha that we say with our Megillah reading. But otherwise, you're still fulfilling the mitzvah of Megillah totally if you don't have a minion, if someone comes to read for you, or if you read by yourself. It seems like you would fulfill the obligation in that way. Okay, so just to summarize, there were a lot of different options here and a lot of different presentations. Rav Shachar seems to go along a few different paths in his analysis of what to do if you can't have a normal Megillah reading. Number one, he says, we'll divide up the Megillah reading into a lot of small readings that would not constitute safety concerns or illegal behavior of having gatherings that are too large. Number one. Now, if you need to stretch out into earlier than the normal appropriate time for Megillah reading, that's something that you are allowed to do, but only if you need to. And he goes to the length to explain why you ideally don't want to stretch out into Binyan Shmashot, but maybe you can. You ideally don't want to stretch out into the earlier day, maybe Od Yom, on Erev Purim, but if you need to, you can. And that seems to be his preferred thrust. His second, avenue, and he likes this one as well, is a person could read by themselves. If a person is able to do so, you could read by yourself. He has not actually told us what to do if the choice is either read by yourself or read early with a group. He hasn't told us what the halacha should be there. Hard to know what he would prefer. I think he might be getting at this idea. In this last paragraph, it's better to read Lekroha Megillah Ba'asara. It's really better to read with a minyan. And that even if that means being early, it seems like he might go in that direction, but I would want to ask him to know what his view is. And then finally, if none of these options work, he comes to the conclusion, maybe you could rely on some lenient opinions to hear a Megillah over Zoom if you're otherwise unable to read it for yourself or hear it from other people. Maybe you could rely on such opinions in such an extreme situation. I just want to go very briefly back to that Rabbi Mann summary as well, because he offered one or two other perspectives I thought were interesting on Zoom readings. Oh, yes, please.
When you read it for yourself, though, you have to have a klaf, he's saying, right?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you for clarifying. You couldn't read it from an art scroll or a Tanakh. You'd want to have a cloth, which not everyone has, though I found that it's much more common for people to have a cloth for the Megillah than to have a Sefer Torah on their own, for example. So anyone who does have one, or he mentioned, can even borrow one, maybe, or Rabbi Mann mentioned rather, can even borrow one, might be a valid option. And it's possible that people who know that they're going to go to shul and will feel comfortable hearing the Megillah there could lend their cloth to people who won't be able to go for, you know, safety reasons or other reasons. That might be a way for a community to balance this. And this one paragraph I really liked that Rabbi Mann wrote. If one is unable to hear the Megillah normally, it is worthwhile to hear it electronically. This is not only due to the lenient opinions, right? The lenient opinions who do say that maybe in a case of necessity, you're able to do some mitzvot this way. Exposure to Megillah and Esther's content has value. First of all, there's just value in hearing the content of the Megillah, independent of fulfilling your mitzvah. The content is important. Like reading the Parsha from a Chumash when one cannot go to shul. Just it's Torah. There's meaning in the substance that we hear. So if you're stuck at home and you're not able to hear the Megillah, certainly it's valuable to be thinking about the Megillah, to be learning it, even if you can't hear it in a way that fulfills your obligation. And it enables one to remember Hashem's kindness. That's another advantage of the Megillah. That's, you know, a big theme of the story, as well as Venahapochu, various aspects of God's salvation and God's kindness. In present difficult times in many communities, the feeling of camaraderie is also important, especially on a holiday as communal as Purim. There's a value if, you know, in a community where, you know, let's say really nobody is able to go to shul for whatever reason, or shul can't open for legal reasons. So have a reading on Zoom. Maybe you're not going to fulfill your obligation. It's possible that you will, but maybe you won't. But having everyone together on a Zoom call would be a powerful communal experience to get at, you know, some of the substance of Purim, even if not all of it. Hopefully people will not incorrectly learn from this, that if away or infirm for Purim, they do not need to make an effort to fulfill the mitzvah properly. Of course, this is the difficulty, the tension that Poskim are trying to deal with here. If we allow Zoom readings now, we give the impression that Zoom readings are an perfectly normal, acceptable way to do the mitzvah, which they're not. They're very much a minority view. Rav Shachter goes to lengths to establish that they really are an extreme minority position. I wouldn't say extreme, but a minority position that you really should only rely on in very extreme circumstances. And if you can go to shul, you really, really should go to shul. Zoom is not like a proper replacement for going to shul, at least for this mitzvah, maybe for others, but not for this one. And so the tension is we want to make sure it's allowed for this year, but not for, we don't want people to think that, oh, this is a perfectly acceptable choice for the future. That's a tension that has to be balanced when you're trying to, you know, present these halachot. Okay, so we're already pretty far along. I want to just very briefly allude to one or two to the issue. I'm sorry, of reading Megillah in the morning. Rav Shachter deals with a fundamentally very similar issue. What are you allowed to do with regard to Megillah reading during the day? How early can you start? So the Mishnah in Megillah, I'm sorry, where is the screen? There we go. The Mishnah in Megillah says, "Ein korin et Megillah, v'lo malin, v'lo tovlin," other things, but the one that's relevant for us is you don't read the Megillah, "ad teneitz hachama," until the sun rises. "V'chulan she'asu misha'ala amud ha'shachar," but if one read the Megillah from dawn, from after dawn, then kasher, you have fulfilled your obligation. But you shouldn't do it. It's ein korin et Megillah. Don't read it until after sunrise. But if you did, you'd fulfill your mitzvah. That's the sort of interesting balance that we have here. And that's the basis for the conversation. So certainly, you know, a Nate's reading of the Megillah would be quite early. The question is, can we go any earlier? So Rav Shachter cites a machloket. We'll actually look at it in the way he presents it in another sefer of his. About whether that apply, first of all, why that is, and second of all, what to do with that practically. Rashi bi'er shama. Rashi on that Mishnah says, "Shedvar zeh gzera derabanan hi." It is a rabbinic gzera, you not to read it until after sunrise. Shema yita lamul olomar hahalal afilu kodem alot hashachar. We don't want anyone to mistakenly come to the conclusion that you could hear Megillah before dawn. So we don't want you to read it right after dawn. Maybe you'll accidentally read it right before. So we want to make sure that you wait until sunrise so that even if you start a bit early, you will still fulfill your mitzvah appropriately. Midorabanan, you're not supposed to, but if you do, you'll at least fulfill your mitzvah, midoraisa. Ubesefer se chemer hevi shahagon ha'aderet av beitin demir hayasavur shebizmanenu. A view of the aderet that says that nowadays, sharov b'nei adam yishlehem sha'onim. Most people have watches, and so they know what time it is. They're much less likely to make a mistake about when dawn is and when they're allowed to start reading the Megillah. And most shuls have clocks on the walls. Even if you don't have a watch, you at least have a clock. You are still allowed to do these mitzvot from after dawn because you know when dawn is now. You have a precise timekeeping measurements. And Vahu, the Stei Chemed, Nechlak Alav, disagrees and says, V'savur de gzeira zo haita davar sheba minyan, v'tzarach minyan acher lahatiro. This is a gzeira de Rabbanan. Gzeira de Rabbanan, or many gzeira de Rabbanan, are what's called a davar sheba minyan, that a sufficient number of authorities gathered together to rule on. And if a sufficiently large group, you know, issued a gzeira, you need a group of equal or greater stature to remove that gzeira. And nowadays, we don't have a group as authoritative as those in the Mishnah who, you know, ruled the halacha, and so we can't rely on this. So that's the machlokat. Okay. And Rosh Hashanah now says, well, given that there's a machlokat, nowadays, can we actually read from after dawn? We know that in an extreme circumstance, we're allowed to fulfill the mitzvah in a way that would be not allowed bidya, that would not be allowed normally. So normally we wouldn't allow one to read Megillah before sunrise, but maybe we'd be allowed to. Umemela ba'uta makomot sheyitzarchu lekrot kol hayom kulo kriya achar kriya, in a place where you're going to need to have just one after the other Megillah readings, yishla hadchil me'alot hashachar, you're allowed to read it from dawn and not from sunrise, and that gets you another reading or two if you have fast bali kriya. Practically in this last paragraph, I'll summarize it outside. He deals with the question of, okay, so if you're going to read Megillah that early, what are you allowed to do other things that early? And he says, really, no. Really, if you're going to do that, you should go for Megillah after dawn. And then you should, after hearing Megillah, you know, go home and daven with Talis Tefillah, a minion, you know, maybe a minion if you're in a place where you have a minion, though presumably if you're in a place with a minion, you'd be able to hear Megillah in that context. But if you're going to an early morning reading and the way it works is that you'll hear the Megillah, you should then go home and daven properly once the proper zman for tefillah comes. Because anything that allows you to daven this, to hear the Megillah this early, doesn't apply to davening, right? There's no requirement that you daven at the same time you hear the Megillah. You can hear the Megillah as early as possible to make enough time for everyone to hear Megillah. And then daven at your own time at a zman that would be appropriate for davening. So interestingly, and we've seen, you know, we're talking to deal with this pretty thoroughly. The primary mechanism for solving the COVID Megillah problem is make more readings. Find lots of times, have lots of readings happening as much as possible to the extent that almost everyone will be able to hear those readings. And if anyone is in a position where they're unable to, he hasn't mentioned quarantine, for example, but quarantine might be such an example, then, okay, maybe you're able to rely on some of these other mechanisms. But the primary mechanism seems to be just make lots of readings, make them happen on a practical level. This is one example of something we've noted before of situations where poskim solve halakhic problems just by thinking creatively, logistically, about how to best navigate different situations. Okay, I'm going to stop the recording, but we'll stay on for any questions if anyone is interested.